Welcome to Decoding the Customer. I'm your host, Julia Allfelt. This episode of the podcast features an interview with Laura Jack. Laura is a counselor, coach, and author of the best-selling book, The Compassion Code. Laura studied business, and after university, she moved to Panama to co-found several successful businesses in the tourism sector. In early 2008, Laura's life took a dramatic turn when her mom died in a tragic accident. This event propelled not only her life, but also her career in a completely different direction. She returned to the U.S. and began focusing on how she could help others navigate the grieving process to find peace and balance in their lives. Laura has gone on to help thousands of people, and she now trains grief recovery specialists and provides coaching to professionals in the wellness industry. I am fortunate enough to count Laura among my close personal friends. We met at the tender age of 20 while we were both studying abroad in Santiago, Chile. On a recent visit to the U.S., Laura and I were catching up about life and our jobs. During this conversation, Laura was telling me about her work, helping people understand and relate kindly to others, and a penny dropped. We realized that even though we work in very different fields, there were some profound common veins. A few weeks later, we recorded an interview via Skype for my podcast. Laura's knowledge on the topic of compassion is impressive. During our recorded conversation, she provided practical ideas for how managers can equip customer-facing teams for success, and she shared some interesting insights on how to help back-office employees relate to customers that they may never meet in person. In a world where the customer is king, brands must deliver great experiences. To do this, teams and individuals within organizations have to understand customer needs and care about their contribution to the journey. I hope that this interview will spark ideas for how to instill compassion as a core team value. Hi, Laura. Thank you for joining me today, and congratulations on your book launch. The Compassion Code has been incredibly successful. You hit Amazon's bestseller list before your public launch, which I didn't even know was something that was possible. Clearly, your message has struck a chord. Do you think that people are seeking a world with more compassion?
Gosh, I hope so, Julia. I think that it's one of those buzzwords these days, which is kind of funny because when I started writing this book over 3 years ago, it was not. And so it's been interesting to watch the evolution of the word compassion and the feeling and sentiment of bringing more compassion into life, whether it's in the workplace or whether it's in our personal lives, becoming more and more prevalent. And so, you know, I had no idea that this would be such an interest of so many people, but because of what's going on in our world, I feel like we are seeking compassion more than ever before.
Do you think some of that is because we're removed from others because we interface with each other digitally and in these sort of removed formats, or is that irrelevant?
I'm sure that plays some role because it's part of our changing world. You know, the fact that so much of our community building is online nowadays, and so much of the way we interact with others is, you know, over the phone or Skype or via Facebook or something like that. Those are all interesting ways that we connect. And it's also changed the way that we interface with each other in person. And so I think because we've had this opportunity to kind of get removed, but also be connected in these weird ways, it does affect how we act and interact. I don't know that we were ever necessarily good with compassion. I think it's just something that's coming up now as, wow, we really need to be kinder to each other. We really need to relate more kindly to ourselves. And so I think it's part of this evolution. I mean, nothing's new, but it's definitely because of the changing world and the changing climate of the world. You can't have a changing world and a changing climate with technology and not think that that's part of it.
So in the field of customer experience, we talk a lot about the importance of putting yourself in the customer's shoes and creating experiences based on customer wants and needs. This is something that I used to call empathizing with the customer. But after reading your book, I realized that I may have been mixing up the definitions of compassion and empathy. What are your definitions for these two concepts? And why is it important to have a distinction between the two?
So the way that I have come to define compassion versus empathy, and I'm going to add one more, which is sympathy. So sympathy is feeling for someone. So it's really a little bit more removed from feeling somebody's pain. So if you think about a sympathy card, you know, it's not an empathy card. It's a sympathy card. We're feeling sorry for someone. I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry for this. And we're sad for them. we're not in their shoes, though. We're just feeling for them from afar, right? And then on the other side of that is empathy. And empathy is feeling with someone. And you hear about people talk about sensitivity and people who are empaths. And these are people who feel so deeply with others that it actually creates pain within themselves. And this is what can lead to empathy fatigue, which is just feeling with so many for so long with so much depth of pain that we can't really separate ourselves from it. And so it's kind of the other extreme from sympathy in the sense that it's feeling a deepness within ourselves, a deepness of pain or other people's feelings. And then compassion is about relating kindly to others. It's about loving kindness for other people's suffering. And so for me, compassion is the balance between sympathy and empathy. And that's to me where we want to live, is in this feeling of, okay, I have good boundaries. I know how to support myself. And I know how to connect with others in a way that is meaningful and deep. So without falling down in the pits of despair, which is maybe where you'd go with an overly empathetic person.
Okay. So you talk about relating kindly when people are suffering, but you could take the same principles and say relating kindly to just somebody else's experience too, or relating kindly to how you interface with somebody else.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a great way to transfer that same sentiment over into the world of customer experience.
Yeah. So what do you think it means to be compassionate to customers?
I think it's considering what they may be going through. There's a part in my book that talks about how everyone has a story and how we can't really other.
I love that part of your book.
Well, it's so relevant because we all have a story. If you're a living, breathing human being, you have a story. A lot of people will say, oh, no, you know, my story is not important, or I don't have a story or whatever, but everyone on earth has a story that's brought them to where they are and who they are. And so part of having compassion for a customer also means understanding that that person has a story. And most likely the way they're acting toward you has nothing to do with you, which is a really great way to have compassion for them without getting wrapped up in their stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. I mean, you're talking earlier about boundaries, and that sounds like something important. So relating to somebody else's experience, relating kindly, considering their experience, but also protecting yourself within that too. So it's about finding a healthy balance there.
Right, exactly.
So do you think that compassion is a critical component of positive customer experiences? Is lack of compassion where possibly things kind of go pear-shaped?
I think that when people get angry or get frustrated, being on the customer service side of things, it can definitely improve their experience if they are to be more compassionate. What it does is it gives others the benefit of the doubt. And so instead of just assuming, oh, this guy's a jerk, or why is he mad at me? It takes the me out of it a little bit, because really when it comes to, I know that the, you know, the customer's always right and all that stuff. We also have to be compassionate towards ourselves and know when it's time for us to say, you know what, today is a really hard day for me. And I don't necessarily feel like I have the bandwidth to put up with this. And so that's another boundary that we have to put up sometimes. I don't have the energy to give this other person right now. And knowing ourselves well enough to know when we need to ask for help from someone else. And that's about having self-compassion, because I think all of this starts with having compassion for ourselves, understanding that we too have a story. Because a lot of times, you know, there's people who stand on the street and, you know, whether it's for Planned Parenthood or for Save the Children or any of those. And we kind of treat them oftentimes as if they don't exist. Like we ignore them because we know that they're going to be asking us for money. So you walk by and you're like, oh, please don't talk to me. Right. And I think about their experience and I think, oh my gosh, what a challenging job that would be, because it's not about that person at all. It's about what they're representing and what we aren't interested in engaging in. And in the same breath, it's okay to not want to engage. It's okay if you had a bad day and you really don't feel like engaging with a stranger, it's okay to say, no, thank you, not today. Right. And so it's like knowing your boundaries, but also respecting other humans as humans instead of just ignoring them, pretending they're not there, or even being rude to them, because they're humans too. And so I think that improving the experience with a customer starts with being kind to ourselves, knowing what our boundaries are, knowing when to ask for help.
You brought up a couple of interesting points there about taking care of ourselves. And there's a challenge there too, because if you are a customer facing team member, let's say you work in a retail store or in a call center, your job is to be customer facing, and you don't always have the luxury of saying, I don't want to do this today. And so that's where I think the role of team managers and team leaders and organizational leadership comes into play in terms of coaching and helping team members understand, you know, if they have a really bad call or they deal with a particularly cantankerous customer, helping them work through it and understand it and process it so they don't take it personally. What do you think are some of the warning signs that somebody could watch out for in terms of empathy fatigue or having it be too much of an overload?
I love what you said about the team being a huge part, especially in like a forward facing or a client customer facing role where you don't really have a choice. I love that you said we need to get the team leaders involved, because I think that that's going to be what keeps somebody at a job, is feeling like they're heard and acknowledged. So I want to just acknowledge that first, because I think that's really important. As a team leader, one of the best things that we can do is support the people who are sometimes having these struggles on the calls or having these struggles with customers, because, you know, sometimes it is really hard to interface with people, one, who we've never met, and two, who are angry or frustrated, who are usually not frustrated with us, but we're the messenger, right? And so having somebody to just say, man, that was really frustrating, and for them to not be like, no, you're fine, get your act together and just get on your next call.
Or pretend like it's not a problem.
Right, you know. Or pretend like, oh no, it's not a big deal, that shouldn't have bothered you. Rather to say, you know, like, yeah, that really is hard, I'm so sorry. Sometimes people can say really hurtful things, and I'm sorry that you had to be the recipient of that. Sometimes that's all people need, is just to be acknowledged and validated for their experience. Like, yeah, that was really hard. I'm sorry that you had to go through that. Yeah, we've all kind of had calls that really took our breath away, or that really like took us down a notch, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And just take a moment, you know, if you need to go to the bathroom or you need to take a little break, do something nice for yourself for a moment, and then come back and hopefully your next call will be better. But, you know, like even just that little piece of acknowledgement can make a huge difference for somebody.
Yeah. One of the things that I see the clients I work with, there are, you know, really high turnover rates with in-store staff, for example, or with mm-hmm. their call center staff. And some of that, it looks to be, at least from my perspective, that it's this burnout, you know, because it's mm-hmm. it's hard. It can be very hard to be at the coalface, as they say. What are some kind of warning signs?
I feel like that is probably more obvious, is that people often are, you know, they complain more, maybe a little less excited to come to work each day, shorter fuse with clients, maybe having more and more of those issues where they have hard calls. Because, you know, when you're frustrated, people feel it, your energy shifts, and people mm-hmm. react differently to you. And so I would say the warning signs are that people are clearly not as excited to be there. Their enthusiasm has waned. They're maybe a little bit more apathetic. Maybe they have more phone calls that don't go well, being late to work or feeling like maybe decreased productivity. Those are all related to burnout, but they could also be related to other personal things that are going on in their lives. It may or may not be related to work. That's yeah. where the whole idea of self-compassion really comes in, is that sometimes we have to be kind to ourselves because we have other things going on that other people don't know about. Just like we don't know what the customer's always going through, we also don't always know what our employees are going through.
Yeah. It's important, I think, to look for these shifts in behavior. Looking at sort of the flip side of this, so maybe not somebody who is edging towards empathy and empathy burnout, but the other end of the spectrum, somebody who is unable to perhaps relate to customers or clients, people that they're providing a service for. What are some tips and ideas or suggestions about how you could help coach somebody to become a little bit more compassionate?
So with empathy fatigue, I always encourage people to create strong and healthy boundaries, right? So it's always about how can I take care of myself so that I can take better care of others without burning myself out, right? So the other side of that is creating more connection. So for people who are on the side of sympathy, overly sympathetic to the point of pity or disconnect, if you will, like if you have somebody who doesn't even know how to really relate to their customer, it would be best to help them learn how to connect. So that might mean actually connecting with a customer. It may mean role play where you pretend to be the customer and you talk to this person about your challenges, what you're facing. There's this quote, and I think I put it in my book and I don't remember, but it says, I felt sad for the millions of Chinese who were starving until I met one Chinese man who was starving, and that made all the difference.
You did put that quote in your book. It was in there. It was a good one. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I can feel sad for a group of people who I don't know and I don't understand. And I can feel like this distant disconnect and like, oh, that's too bad for them. But then I actually meet a person who is starving and I'm like, oh man, this is really rough to see it, to experience it, to witness it, to be part of it, to even that's one step removed from yourself. I feel like that is the way to get somebody to connect. So if it means role play, because you actually can't get them connected to the customer, if it means maybe they spend a few days calling customers and finding out about their experiences so that they're getting the other side. Because I think just like we should all wait tables at some point in our lives, because it gives us the experience of what it's like to be on the service side of things, rather than always just being the served, it could be really helpful to be that person who is maybe in a non-customer facing role, but maybe we get them a little out of their comfort zone and get them interfacing with the customer, even if it's one or two times, just to have them understand what must this customer feel like? What must they be going through? How can I make it better for them? Because again, until we put ourselves in their position, it's really hard for us to understand. And even then it's very challenging.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's an interesting point that you bring up about we've all waited tables. So this is something that working in the developing world, working in South Africa, I see as a major difference. So in American culture, it's very normal for people to work a job in the service industry while they're in high school or in university. And that's less common elsewhere in the world. And I think when people ask me, why is it that the service culture in the United States is different? One of the reasons that I sometimes point to is the fact that many people can put themselves in the shoes of somebody providing service, because at some point in their life, it's very likely that they waited on tables or were a lifeguard or did something. Whereas in other environments, that's not necessarily the case. So people don't understand what it's like to be a server.
Right. So maybe a way to do that where in a place where that's not so common is through the role play or through that personal experience where we actually meet the customer, then do kind of a panel. You know, I don't know if that's something that would be possible, but doing something where they are physically or even pretend engaging with people who are going through the experience that they've created. So they can understand a little bit better. What must this person be experiencing? I love the example that you used earlier. Would you mind sharing that again?
I oftentimes find myself working with back office teams who are the ones defining and designing experiences, even though they may never interact with customers themselves. And I was working on a project with a financial institution, and they released a product into the marketplace. And when it was tested, it required, you know, something ridiculous, like 10 or 11 steps to complete something very simple. And when we went back to the IT team, their reasoning for this had nothing to do with malice or wanting to create a bad experience. It was just, they just hadn't thought about it in a different way because they don't interact with the customer on a regular basis. So they were doing what made sense to them. And the customer really wasn't a part of their frame of reference. And I see those things happening time and time again. So I'm always looking for ways that I can foster, I guess you could call it indirect compassion, how you can have compassion for somebody that you never interact with, that you're several steps removed from them, and maybe they have a totally different frame of reference than you do.
Yeah. We call that creating like an avatar. So that might be something like in coaching, we often create avatars, even with branding. You know, when you're talking about how do we reach our ideal customer? Well, it's like we create this avatar. We make up a person. Like we make up everything about them, from their hair color to their eye color to what they ate for breakfast today to what kind of gym they go to and what do they do for fun on the weekends and how much money do they make and are they single, are they married? Like we make up an individual person. We create this avatar person, and then we walk that person through our experience. So that might also be a good exercise for that IT team, for example. How does Susie Lou do it? Does she, you know, like, or, you know, Jeremy or whatever, you name your person and you walk them through it. How would this experience be for them? And then now they've kind of created this avatar, this person that they feel somewhat connected to, and they're actually looking at it from that person's perspective, which is ultimately having some compassion for them because they're connecting and relating to them.
Yeah. So here's another question on that. I love this idea of creating an avatar. What if the avatar is somebody that is so different from you? In your book, you reference this concept that everybody has a map. And it's this unique lens that one brings to everything that they do. And it's based on culture and language and values and things that you're brought up with. And in some environments, the maps are so different. So for example, you and I have both spent a lot of time in the developing world. You owned and ran a business in the hospitality industry in Panama. You've been to South Africa, so you've had a lot of experience in developing economies. And in developing economies, very often the gap between the rich and the poor can be greater. And so sometimes the avatar in these cases is somebody who comes from a totally different socioeconomic group. And then in South Africa, you have the added complexity of the fact that there's 11 national languages and all these cultures, you know. So how do you then, if I'm creating an avatar and I'm working with a team, and then this customer is somebody who literally and figuratively speaks a different language, how would you suggest crossing those barriers, those boundaries?
That's a great question. And it's something that's very real. I would say, again, it's really like being able to connect to a person, an individual. I grew up having exchange students living at my house. We had different exchange students live with us over the years from different countries, from all over the world, different languages. And one of the things that that did for me was I was like, oh, these are just people. Just like us, they experience similar emotions. Their experiences of the world are different. Their map of the world is different. What they're bringing to the table, their values and their beliefs, whatever, those might be different. But what's similar and what remains constant is that we all experience common humanity. One of the things that would be helpful is meeting people, actually getting to meet somebody, bring someone in and like have them talk about their experience. It would probably be something that the people who are working on that team would remember forever is okay. And, you know, obviously you get their permission and you say, hey, our team wants to ask you questions. And you might even bring in a translator if they don't speak the same language, asking them about their experience. And so that then these people are no longer strangers. It's just somebody, oh, well, I met somebody like that once. And now I'm going to visualize that person when I'm going through this experience or when I'm creating an experience for this type of person. And it allows them to become human instead of just this like vague, ambiguous version of a human that they don't really understand or know.
And then with that, I mean, it's important to understand what makes us similar, what brings us together, but also how we might respond to things differently too, and where there are sort of different cultural divides. I mean, I see this in South Africa, where sometimes different behaviors or things trigger different responses because they mean different things in different cultures. So for example, I'm left-handed, and you know, for the first while that I was here, I didn't know that in some African cultures, handing somebody something with your left hand is like kind of offensive. So I ran around handing people the till at the grocery store, or handing somebody something, or a colleague handing them some paper, just using my left hand to hand things to people, totally oblivious to the fact that I was offending people. I mean, we can't connect to everybody, you know, all the customers out there in the world. What are some of the ways that we can teach ourselves to relate to groups of people?
Well, I think learning some of those idiosyncrasies of that culture are important. So for both of us, you and I live together in Chile. And so we learned slang. We learned about the different meanings of certain words. We learned about things that were maybe inappropriate there that we were used to in our culture and our country. And so I think taking the time and energy to actually understand other groups of people, it comes back to knowing other. You had to be in South Africa. I'm sure you got a little bit of a pass because you're not from there. And so people are like, oh, that's really rude. And then they're like, oh, but she's from the United States. So we'll give her a pass. And now you know better and you do your best to, you know, accommodate. But by having like a crash course in another person's culture, particularly if you're creating a product or service related particularly for that group, I think that could be highly effective in making sure that, one, their customer experience is going to be better, and two, we're going to have compassion for this other person, this other group of people, because now we understand them a little bit better. And why is it important to me? Well, because I'm going to be servicing them and that's my job. And so you have to instill, we're creating this experience for them. And therefore it's important for us to gather as much information about them as possible. Doing something where we're learning about our customers so that we can relate to them more effectively and easily and compassionately would improve the customer experience and would improve our understanding of why are we even helping these people in this way? Why do they need this? Like, how can we be better and more effective at doing it? So it always comes back to having curiosity about other people.
Yeah. No, I think that's so true. I mean, you talked about that in your book, curiosity, compassion,
and caring. I think that curiosity is, and one of my mentors said this to me once, she said, curiosity is the cure for judgment. Because when you're curious, we're not judging.
In my customer experience advisory work, we'll work with clients and with frontline teams that are, quite frankly, burned out, and they're in this cycle of judgment. They're in this cycle of not listening to customers' specific situations, but just assuming that they know what's gone on or what's happening and then judging. And it becomes like a coping mechanism or a way to protect yourself from potentially volatile situations, potential volatile customer feedback. But it's interesting what you say, that being curious instead of judging is something that's super important.
Well, and what comes up for me when you're talking about that, the people who are at the point of burnout and judgment and, you know, frustration, my first thought is, when was the last time they were heard? And so it all comes back to giving ourselves compassion, being kind to ourselves, but also making sure that as a leadership team, the people who are doing that job that's so important, customer service is so important, that those people creating that experience for those customers are being taken care of. They're being loved and treated with respect, because that job can suck. And so to be treated,
it can be taxing.
You know, it can be so taxing. And to be able to say, hey, you're doing such a great job, and being recognized and acknowledged for the hard work they're putting in, even if they're making lower wages, is so valuable, because all we ever want is to be acknowledged. All we want as humans is to be like appreciated and feel like we're respected and belong, you know, and finding out what people's kind of, I don't know if you've heard of the five love languages. There's a five love languages for corporate, where you learn like, what do people need? So maybe over here is Joe, and Joe needs words of affirmation, whereas Cindy needs you to get her a little gift. Right. Like she needs like a little sign on her desk that says, great job. Right. And like every person responds differently. So finding out, like getting a profile for your employees of what is it that makes you feel appreciated? How do you want to be treated and respected? And starting with that, and how they can then take care of themselves in order to do a better job taking care of others. Ultimately, the most important thing is that these people, maybe they're burnt out because they haven't been cared for or heard in a long time, whether it's at work or at home.
You told me once that everything people do is either an act of love or a cry for love. We can ask our employees to represent a brand, to deliver on a brand promise, to care for their customers and clients. But we also have to recognize that there will be times when their actions are a cry for love, so to speak, a cry for help, for assistance, for support. There's a lot of talk in the customer experience community at the moment about customer experience and employee experience and why it's so important for those two things to be aligned, and how you're never going to achieve a good customer experience if you don't have a good employee experience.
Absolutely. One of the most amazing things that my business partners in Panama did so well was they made each person who worked for them, even if it was for a week or for a month or for 6 months, feel ownership over what they were doing. They made them feel connected. They made them feel loved. And so instead of being like somebody else's responsibility, where, you know, sometimes you go to a coffee shop and you're like, hey, do you have this? I don't know. I just work here. Instead of that mentality of like, I just work here, being like, hold on, let me find out for you, because you're proud, because you feel ownership over it. And I think that's one of the best things you can do, is give your employees ownership over their experience, so they feel connected, so they feel proud. And then therefore, they're going to be delivering a better experience to the people they're serving, because, man, I work here. This place is awesome, and I want to represent it to the best of my ability. You know, and that's a huge difference, because if you're like, I don't know, I don't care, I just work here, that's a totally different sentiment than being proud that you work somewhere and wanting to make sure you deliver on the brand promise.
It's almost like helping people understand how what they do on a day-to-day basis contributes to a bigger purpose.
I was working with a physician once, and she was frustrated with one of her employees, this guy who worked for her, did all of her scheduling. And I was like, when was the last time you told him how important his job was? Because he controlled her day-to-day life. He could give her 30 people to see, or 45 or 50 people to see per day. Because physicians, I don't know if it's the same in South Africa, but they're overworked. This guy, this person who she was having all this trouble with, she was completely at his mercy, even though he was getting paid, whatever, $12 an hour, and she's making hundreds of thousands, maybe. And I was like, when was the last time you told him how important his role is in your life? Because it is. So they sat down and they had a meeting, and she shared with him, you're the first person people see when they come here, or the first person they talk to. Like, their experience at this hospital is very much affected by how you interact with them. He was like, huh, it changed everything. She started treating him with more respect, and he started being more respectful and kind to the patients. And her schedule got a lot better, because all of a sudden he wasn't angry with her. So he wasn't stacking her 50 deep in patients that she couldn't handle, even though she had told him, please don't do that.
Yeah. Helping people understand what they do makes a difference, and thanking them for that. And those team members, they're the face of the experience, they're the face of the brand. And it's important to treat them well and treat them with respect, and to teach people, to show people, I guess, the honor in what they do. Well, thank you so much, Laura, for taking the time to chat with me. This has been really interesting, and I think that you bring a fresh and interesting perspective to what it means to be compassionate, why this is important for the world as a whole, and how this is something that's really important within the field of customer experience. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's so fun to think about some of these different perspectives and angles that you experience on a regular basis that are kind of outside of my world. So it's really fun to think of compassion on this level. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Decoding the Customer. For more information about my conversation with Laura, or to subscribe to the podcast, please visit my website, julia-allfelt.com.